Welcome back. This is David Wilner.
And Barnea Levy Sullivan.
This is the Landmine Show, brought to you by Foundation Stone. And we're here in Efrat. We're back in the studio, Barnea and I. We have a wonderful guest sitting in the studio together with us. Barnea, who are we sitting with?
Professor Aaron Dembski is in Bar-Ilan University. He is in the Department of Jewish History. He's the director of the Project for the Study of Jewish Names, which I would love to talk about, but there's an overwhelming focus for this program. We'll see if it crops up. And he is in the Department of the History of Ancient Israel. And he just published a book. The English title of the book is Literacy in Ancient Israel. And the Hebrew title of the book is Yediat Sefer Bisrael Be'et Atika from Bialik Publishers. And you go into this book and you are absorbed. And what's clear is, and we're only going to say this joke once, is that Professor Dembski is a man of letters.
Okay, so I used it. I set you up before
it's over.
Before started
That's right.
with that one.
That's right.
But okay, it's still funny.
It's still funny.
Mildly
Thank
funny.
You.
But they don't mean the same thing in Hebrew and English.
Welcome to the Landmines program, Professor Aaron Dembski.
Hi, good afternoon.
Actually, welcome back, because you were from our very first guest 3 years ago.
And we are fortunate to have had your conversation with us in the studio on a number of different issues. And this book is a landmark. It's a milestone in a career spent researching, examining the letters, the writing of ancient Israel. And I was commenting now as Barnea was introducing you that the book title in Hebrew and English really don't mean the same thing. Literacy, if I'm not mistaken, means the ability to read and to write. And Yediat Sefer is really has a completely different kind of a connotation, even though they're used interchangeably as translations for each other. But Yediat Sefer is usually a person who's knowledgeable, someone who's well-read, as opposed to someone who's literate. Did you have something along those lines in mind?
Yes, definitely. I think that this you're touching now upon one of the key points of the book, and certainly a point which I deliberated upon. A question about literacy in English certainly has a broad meaning and has the sort of a dual meaning. Literacy can mean the ability to read and write, which in Hebrew you would translate Yediat Kro Uchtov. And then also has the broad meaning of what we would call Yediat Sefer. I deliberated on this title of the book in Hebrew because the question is broader than one's reading and writing ability. Actually, the book deals with the impact of writing in general and the book upon the culture of ancient Israel. When thinking about the title of the book, at least in English, literacy certainly covers all the bases. As you said, regarding the Hebrew, one possibility was to use the modern word for literacy, which is orianut, which means reading or writing. I chose not to use that term, because actually, Orianut is derived from Bar Urian, or Oraita, which is the Aramaic word for Torah. So that a Bar Urian, intelligent, illiterate person, really still retains the ancient meaning of learned in Torah. That's not my object here. So I chose not to use that term, which doesn't appear on the cover. The Hebrew, again, the Hebrew title, which is longer than the English, is made up of three
components.
Aspects, three components, which reflect the work in the book. The first word is Yediat Sefer, which is literacy in the widest sense, book knowledge, book understanding, which includes the ability to read and write, but also suggests the impact of the book and of writing in general. The last term, Be'et Atika, Again, while the focus of the book is on the biblical period, which I try to define along terms that are acceptable in scholarship, but again, gives the idea which has directed my own scholarship of seeing what's usually called a longue durée, continuity, the cultural impact and continuity over a great age. So while I say I'm looking at the biblical period, I'm focusing on the biblical period, I do have to start earlier than that with the very beginning of writing, which is around 3100 BCE, which is much earlier than ancient Israel, and then picks up with the invention of the alphabet roughly around 1800 BCE, again by the Canaanites, in other words, a pre-Israelite innovation. And then the book continues on to the end of antiquity, which takes us through the rabbinic period down to the beginning of Islam. So while I touch on these points, I don't go into all of that. The book would have been 2,000 pages, 3,000 pages, had I gone into all of these aspects. But I do see a larger perspective, a continuity of cultural trends and things that should be looked at. In other words, in the what we call in the diachronical aspect of how things develop, how they evolve. And so this is part of the book and my thinking as a historian. So that is framed in Be'et Atika.
In ancient times.
In ancient times.
That's a second difference from the title. It's not in ancient Israel. It's literacy in Israel in ancient times, right, if I was going to do it.
So that the second component, Be Yisrael in the Hebrew title, really gives me the focus. In other words, the title itself in Hebrew brings together three aspects of my thinking regarding literacy, and the English title just sort of gives me a more general approach.
So let's take the listeners back in time, and let's talk about the earliest writings in Israel, right? What would you say is probably the premier exemplar of early writing in Israel?
Do you mean of the people of Israel, or do you mean in the land of Israel?
No, the people of Israel. I think that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about Canaanites now. We're talking about...
Well, you're talking again about hard evidence. You're talking about epigraphy, which means inscriptions. We're not talking about the biblical text. We're talking about inscriptions.
So maybe let's clarify the terms. We have epigraphy. We have paleography. What are the differences? What are the different disciplines that are brought to bear in our understanding of early writing?
Epigraphy is the study of ancient inscriptions. Literally, it had to do with inscriptions written on hard surfaces, like stone, or pottery, or metals. Paleography is the science of studying ancient script, ancient alphabet. In other words, the formation of the letters and how they develop, which is a tool for dating, and of course understanding the text, but for dating the text. It's a scientific tool to the extent that we become proficient in understanding how the different letters develop. That's the study of paleography.
Okay, so in a certain sense, what an epigrapher would be concerned with is what's the message, and what the paleographer is concerned with is what are the elements that comprise the message. Is that a fair assessment?
That's a good assessment. The elements, of course, are more. They're more than paleography. It would be paleography. It would be linguistics. It would also be the archaeological horizon and context in which the text was found. That may impact upon the surface that it was written on. In other words, if it's written on stone, it may be a monumental inscription. So the impact of that is that it is ordered or written by the king or by the court, by government. Whereas an inscription on a sherd might just be the jotting down of a scribe or might be even a personal note.
There are those that say that we are missing the main communications of the ancient times because that was done in papyrus or other materials which decayed.
Skin, right. Parchment.
And so we're just picking up the scraps, like the little notes of going to the grocery store, of taking care of things. Mm-hmm. We're missing the main conversation.
Right.
Which you usually didn't write on the side of a building.
Right.
Right. So what we have, though, is two worlds. And I think you're sitting astride both of them. But we have a historical rabbinical record that deals with the biblical text and deals with ancient writings and various verbal and oral traditions regarding early writing and early an early connection of the Jewish people and even our forefathers. I think we even have a tradition that Abraham wrote the Sefer HaYetzirah. He wrote this book, right? And we're talking about very early on that there's a tradition of writing. How much of that can be seen in the historical record? How early can we go back and say we know for a fact that there was writing in Israel?
Well, I think you have to look at the hard evidence here. I would go with my archaeological colleagues and say, let's look at the hard evidence. And one of the things that comes up, and I must temper your words and question, is that we're not looking at the text from rabbinic eyes. So that what we do see is that in an earlier period, in other words, a pre-Mosaic period or pre-Israelite, national Israelite period that is identified with the Iron Age. So if you're looking at earlier traditions, the patriarchal traditions, you will see certain characteristics regarding those stories, particularly in the book of Genesis, which indicate an earlier form of Israelite monotheism. Now, one aspect of those stories is the absence of writing, so that even where you have descriptions of legal situations, like the purchase of the Machpelah cave
in Hebron,
you have no indication that that agreement was made in writing. All the terminology is to listen, to hear, to witness by ear to what is going on. So that view of what's going on, that legal aspect, it reflects a non-literate society. Very similar this weekend on the holiday of Shavuot, Pentecost, we will be reading the book of Ruth. And there too, in chapter 4, you see a legal situation that is is drawn up at the city gate, with the elders being witness, but no document formulated.
Which white drawing up, which comes from the document, wouldn't be the term. We're witnessing an event that's taking place.
Right.
Now, I'm just throwing and injecting in the world of Bible criticism, the book of Genesis can be written much, much, much later. And yet what you're saying, despite that, it's from the academic world, is that you see that the story is reflecting a reality of no writing. If I was superimposing my own reality on an Uria, I would include that they drove there with a car. I wouldn't. So even everybody has to agree that the context is being portrayed as one where there isn't a focus of literacy.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
Of writing, I'm sorry.
That's writing, and that's what you said before. You see, the book does not have anachronisms as the one you suggested before, that Abraham wrote the Sefer Yetzirah, so that this is a later anachronism. In other words, how could Abraham not be literate and not compose major texts, as well as for Noah or for Enoch, mm-hmm, in the book of Enoch, who is attributed to be an early writer and inventor of the alphabet. So that what we're looking at here is later texts looking back from a point of view of widespread literacy and saying, let's put that our ancestors
projected
must have been
back.
Projected back, right. Yeah. So that's anachronistic. And what you're looking at the text of Genesis, and you don't see that anachronism. There are other aspects as well, but among my colleagues in the scholarly world, you will find those who say actually the book of Genesis reflects the Neo-Babylonian period, Neo-Babylonian exile, mm-hmm, which is hard for me to accept because the book itself reflects on customs, even the names of the heroes, Isaac and Jacob and Judah, are a certain form of Amorite names, which are earlier period, and that reflected later. But that's a little bit beyond what we're talking about.
No, but I do want to clear that the academic is not accepting the tradition that it's written down. It views it as anachronistic. There is no question. There's no, that's not, I don't mean the word question. There's no attack here that that you're clearly wrong as other academic texts, just you have no proof for it. We're going to assume it's anachronistic till we've proven otherwise. But when you're analyzing it now, you're analyzing it from a university standpoint. So you ask the question, what is our earliest record of writing or of literacy, however you want to take it, in ancient Israel? How would you answer that question?
Well, it's very good. As my colleague Chris Rolston has mentioned very often, that you can only speak about Hebrew, Hebrew text, due to its the fact that it's written in Hebrew script, which is a style that becomes more formal in the 9th century, or if it reflects the Hebrew language, has words that are definitely in Hebrew. Be that as it may, I would suggest that there are earlier texts that I would attribute to Israelites from the very earliest period, like the Izbitsata Astrakhan, which is a writing exercise. The fifth line contains an alphabet with certain special characteristics of the transposition of letters, like Pei Ayin, the P-O letters, and was found in an archaeological context, which is early Israelite. For these reasons, I would say that they do reflect writing in Israel, though they it would be hard to say that they're Hebrew per se, but they do reflect the Hebrew people.
And you have a scribal exercise, so that means somebody's being trained. The general challenge has been, what I would like to set up here, Professor Dembski, is the background upon which your book appears. I believe it's going to be a landmark book. It's introducing other lines of thought that have not entered the conversation that I've been listening to for several years from academics, and it changes the landscape. So I'd like to, if you explain the landscape till now of the assumptions, the working assumptions were till now of scribes being literate and how many people, if you could talk about that idea before your book and after your book.
Well, I would say that there are basically two camps of scholars who attributed a high degree of literacy to the ancient Israelites, and those who said is a very limited degree of literacy, and if it all exists, it's the professional literacy of the scribes.
And similar to ancient Egypt.
Similar to ancient Egypt, right. Egypt and Mesopotamia. I think that, first, my assumption is that there are two basic patterns of literacy in the ancient world. And the ancient world means from the beginning of writing, 3000 BCE, down through antiquity. One pattern of literacy is restricted or limited literacy. It was limited to a professional caste, a professional class, determined by one's education, possibly by one's background and family, because the scribes had a great deal of power in controlling the state, controlling the economy, controlling the temples, writing the religious works that explained religion to the people, if they got out to the people at all.
Diplomatic communications,
diplomatic letters, and everything else went through a small group of scribes. That number of scribes has been estimated by various scholars to be 3%, 5% of the ancient communities.
I think that's pretty high, actually. It sounds high to me.
For
an ancient world where you're dependent every day on subsistence, so to speak, in terms of functioning, to be able to dedicate 3 to 5% of your manpower, so to speak, to literacy or to communications.
Yes, but that was in the power structure of these ancient empires like Egypt and Mesopotamia.
That's how they could be an empire.
They could be an empire, could operate that way, as well as those people who would seek this profession, either because of family context and gain their power and wealth in that way, and respect. The second pattern of literacy is what I call a literate society. In other words, where those barriers, those social and cultural barriers, broke down, and literacy became potentially the property of a larger group of people in society, not necessarily a scribal class. I see that development at the end of the late Bronze Age and the early Iron Period.
Give me a year.
The 13th century, 1200, 1100, it's in that period. And what you have here is the breakdown of the scribal monopoly on society, basically a feudal society, or the empires, the great empires. And the people, and what happens here is, I would say, is a result of the alphabetic revolution, to use a term that Frank Cross introduced. The alphabet now gave people a chance to use a simple visual method of representing speech. In other words, instead of hundreds of signs to indicate words or syllables, you now have an invention about 1800, but took about 500 years to evolve, and that was the alphabet, where one could express himself visually in a matter of 22 to 30 signs. So the effect of that, with the breakdown of the scribal monopoly in Canaan of the second millennium, of the empires of Egypt, the Hittites and Mesopotamians, now allowed the newcomers, like the Arameans, the Israelites, or the resurgent Canaanites along the coast, and even the Philistines a little bit later, to seek out a method of notation and calculation and administration that took its form in the alphabet.
I'm going to ask you to hold that thought. We're coming to the end of our first segment. We're going to pick it up after the break. We're talking with Professor Aaron Dembski about his recent book about literacy in ancient Israel. And I want to invite you back after bread. Here, this is David Wilner.
And Brian Levy-Selovac.
You're listening to The Landmine Show on foundationstone.org.